Next up on the Renaissance Man podcast, we have one of the greatest, not only NBA players and shooters, but my friend and former teammate, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who's the subject of a hit documentary on Showtime, which debuts February 3rd, called Stand. Coming up, I've talked to Mahmoud about when he fell in love with basketball, the impact that growing up poor had on his life, and what it was like navigating his Tourette syndrome, which went misdiagnosed for years. Up next, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Let's go.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post, a show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. This week's theme is gratitude. This past weekend, I celebrated a major milestone. I hit the Fab 5-0. Yes, I turned 50. The kid that got introduced to the lexicon as a teenager at the University of Michigan. The name Jalen officially has turned 50. Like a lot of people on their birthdays, it's a time to reflect on life. In particular, I'm really fortunate for the one I've been able to navigate and create for myself. And the feeling that just keeps coming back to me is gratitude. I'm so very thankful for another year. I'm especially thankful to my family, my friends, my loved ones, anybody that's ever believed in me personally or professionally, giving me positive encouragement emotionally, psychologically, people that have continued to uplift me throughout the years. I'm so very grateful on all levels, especially my late mother, Jeannie Cassandra Rose, who on February 2nd, it'll be 2 years since we laid her to rest. I just want to say rest in peace, Ma. I love and miss you very much. And also, I'm extremely thankful for my career in multimedia. I've covered the NBA Finals on television over 20 years, suited and booted, fresh haircuts. I've seen so many champions, and I've seen so many things happen in our lexicon, politically, professionally, and athletically. I'm thankful for my years and not only playing the game I love, but I'm also thankful to hip hop because it's been the soundtrack of my life as it's also turning 50 this year. And last, but certainly not least, I'm thankful to you listeners who check out the Renaissance Man each week and refer your friends, your family, your coworkers, your siblings to this good old-fashioned soul food. And remember that gratitude is an attitude. So have the courage. Yeah, I use that word, courage, to surround yourself with this kind of energy day to day, week to week, month to month, year round, as you continue on your journey. My next guest is someone that I'm extremely grateful for. As a rookie in the NBA, I admired his professionalism, his discipline, his attention to detail, and he has one of the best ball handling yet jump shooting combinations in the history of the game. He would be Steph Curry today. He's one of the most talented players, not only from high school, but college and LSU, but through his career in the NBA. He's also my friend. Coming up, I talked to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf about what it was like seeing so many icons participate in his new documentary, the role that faith plays in his life to this day, and what advice he has for others on how not just to live, but thrive while having a disability. Up next, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. My next guest is a basketball prodigy, my former teammate, who's one of the greatest shooters and ball handlers that the NBA has ever seen. He has a new documentary coming out on February 3rd called Stan. You see this hoodie that I'm rocking? You got to go out and cop one. It is my honor to represent the incredible Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf to the Renaissance Man podcast. Thank you, my brother.
Man, thank you even more. I appreciate you.
So give me a snapshot in the audience. I know your history. You know how much I love you and a fan of your background and everything you accomplish. But give our readers and listeners a snapshot of what it was like growing up in Gulfport, Mississippi.
Oh, man, about 4 or 5 blocks from the beach, single parent, poverty, you know, being misdiagnosed up until the 11th grade. Just real tough, not knowing my father, still don't to this day. And just all of the, you know, challenges, man, and the struggles that come with navigating through all of that, trying to find yourself, who you are, what you want to become. And when you're poor, you know, you don't have as many opportunities, obviously, as people that aren't poor. So you have to develop that mental toughness real early, you know, that life or death mentality. So, yeah, it was tough.
So for those who kind of gloss over the effects of being poor and how it affects your psyche, how it affects so many things, in particular as a young person, talk to me about the conditions you grew up in.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, when you grow up in the ghettos, man, I mean, you know, you're surrounded by prostitution, you're surrounded by drugs. There's food shortages that you have to contend with. And a lot of people, you know, that hadn't gone through that don't realize just statistically, you know, when you're malnourished, your emotions, your brain don't think the same, you know, so that's just a constant because you're not eating not only proper foods, but sometimes you don't have enough to eat. And so those things, man, weigh on you. And then you grow up and you're constantly, especially if you're black, you're being looked at as another person, you know, as the other, as less than. And then you begin to develop, you know, unfortunately, many of us, we develop, you know, this, like, in a sense that we're inadequate, this inferiority complex to a degree. And if we're fortunate, we fight out of it. And a lot of us get to this point, we were able to fight it and, but that's a lot what you're dealing with day in and day out. And on top of that, having Tourette's syndrome, to add to that and not even knowing that you have Tourette's syndrome, you're just being told you have habits, thinking you're crazy. That's another level.
So talk to me more about the misdiagnosis of your Tourette's syndrome and the effects of that as you were growing up?
Man, you know, we went to the doctor. I can remember like yesterday, I'm sitting in there, man, and he tells my mother that, well, he has habits. They come and they go. And then he prescribed these huge orange pills that looked like they had jelly in the inside. And it, boy, I couldn't take them for long before I started throwing them into the cinder blocks, giving my mother the impression. But, you know, just to tell everybody, and you know, in your young mind, you can't really put your finger on it, but we didn't trust what the doctor tell you. But still, something wasn't right about just these are habits, they come and they go. So most of my life was like, man, these are habits, they come and they go, and I would try to explain it. And but yeah, that my mother took me to the hospital. They put EKGs in my head, told me I had to stay up for like 24 to 48 hours. I couldn't sleep. I don't know what that was for, to no avail. And just going through all of that, man, just trying to figure out what's wrong. You know, my mother for years thinking that I was not listening to her, you know, because I started off with blackouts at first. I wouldn't, you know, just wasn't ticking like verbally and throwing my arms and stuff like that, neck, popping my neck. So I would, it looked like I was going to sleep. And she said, hey, boy, don't go to sleep without washing those dishes. Next thing you know, I got a slap across my eye. I said, Mom, I'm not asleep, right? And she felt bad years later, you know, because she didn't know that I was dealing with that condition.
So you were poor. You were dealing with a condition that was misdiagnosed. And kids can be some of the most brutal critics of one another.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you as a student in elementary and middle school and high school navigating those challenges?
Oh, man. Like you say, to navigate going through all of those different levels of grade school, man, and trying to hide what is almost impossible to hide. Because like you say, children are brutal. They'll call you names. When you have people that can see your condition, you have to make sure that even more so, man, you the kindest, you get along with people for the most part, but still they're going to come at you. They're going to joke. I can't even remember all the names they used to call me. But I think one of the things I was blessed to have at my advantage, man, I was a great in sports. Mm-hmm. And so if they did try to jank on me and talk to me, when I got them on the basketball court, I try to take it out on them. You know, and give them that get back, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But it was brutal, but also, man, it was difficult to learn because mm-hmm. while I'm sitting in class, I'm so busy trying to stay still and not have the vocal and verbal tics so that people won't ridicule me and chastise me. So it was hard. You can't possibly listen to the teacher and learn while you're also trying to sit still.
Wow.
And that made it difficult, which ended up leading to me being admitted into a slow learning class in junior high.
Wow.
Yeah, and I said, Mom, I don't need this class. It's just that it takes me longer to get it because of my condition. But she put me in there anyway. And if it wasn't for that white school teacher that gave us about a couple of months, he said, if you can show me you don't belong. And so I buckled down and said, you don't. I said, that's what I've been trying to tell y'all. And wow. It got me out. But that was humiliating for me, man, to go through that.
When did you fall in love with basketball?
Man, I fell in love with basketball. I would say the love, fourth grade. I was like 9, 10 years old. And it was something that, I mean, I flirted with a lot of sports like a lot of us did, but basketball was something. And two, having Tourette's, man, putting on all them uniforms, football, how long it took, it was just taxing. So basketball just came more natural for me. It was easy. All I needed some shorts, you know, a basketball and go. And so it was something about me, man, the fluidity of it, the creativity, you know, just the angles. And I just, and it came more natural to me. And that's when I fell in love with it, like 9, 10 years old.
Who are some of your favorite players that you watched or admired as you started to play the game?
Man, you know what? I mean, a lot of the names of people, well, you know, the Isaiah Thomases, you know, all those guys, man. You know, we saw the Atlanta Hawks a lot, so we saw Dominique Wilkins. And I can't remember all their names now. Eddie Johnson, you know, there's a lot of players, man, that we watched. But my guy, my main guy, and it's funny because our games are not – I mean, he was exciting, but he wasn't really like a flat-out shooter and handle the ball like that. You would think I would have been fascinated at somebody my size. But Dr. J, man, was my guy.
Mine too.
I look, man. But it was a lot of what made him my guy too, man, was just how he carried himself.
Yes.
I always loved dudes that, man, get down, but yet they were humble. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just attracted to that, man. He was just classy dude, still is. You know
yes.
what I mean? Yeah.
Yes.